Farm Terrorism and Genocide in South Africa. For 38 years, Frontline Fellowship has been a mission to the persecuted church seeking to win Africa for Christ. We have to deal with farm terrorism and genocide in South Africa because we have been dealing with the persecution of Christians throughout Africa. Now it's in our own homeland. It's in our own territory. It's right in our own neighborhood. The most dangerous job in the world is being a South African farmer. White South African farmers experiencing the highest rates of violent crime anywhere in the world. Here you can see just some of the closed circuit TV camera coverage of farm attackers. And just recently, the murder of this brother, Brendan Horner, found tied to a farm gate after he was killed the most torturous, barbaric, savage, demonic way. 2nd of October 2020 led to tremendous outpouring of anger and protests. These two criminals, who apparently were boasting about the murder, were apprehended by farmers, handed over to the police, and they are the ones in Senekal right now being tried. All over the country, this is just one attack too many. There's a lot of protests. Stop farm murders. No farmers, no business, no food. Bring back the death penalty. People gathering on their knees, praying outside the court, the magistrate's court in Senekal. Protesters gathering. And you can see these people are peaceful, but interestingly, SATV described them as rioters. And these are the same SATV who describe the people who burn, loot, and destroy as protesters. And you can see even the horses having crosses painted on the side. These are some of the obviously peaceful farmers gathering, but again, SATV call them rioters. Now, sadly, in the whole scheme of things, we had this is the picture that's gone around the world, a police vehicle turned on its side. Now, the police vehicle was trying to ram some of the protesters who were there. Nevertheless, after they had disappeared, somebody set the vehicle alight. Now, the images that you get in BBC and so on looks like the farmers set it alight. The evidence is stronger that it's an own goal that was actually done by the police themselves. There's video footage going out there that the vehicle's on its side, all the protesters left, and then afterwards, somebody went to the back, and then when he came back, you could see the fire starting, and it was not any of the farmers whatsoever. So, but this is how you can actually walk into a trap. We cannot fight like the EFF. The media may treat them with kid gloves, but of course they're looking for even the slightest infraction on the side of those who don't support the narrative. So unfortunately, this is what's gone around the world, and they are talking about openly about white rioters, terrorists, anarchic riots in Senekal and so on. And this is nothing compared to what they did to cliques or to 1,400 18-wheeler Pentechnicon trucks burned and looted in the last 12 months, for example, or looting of how many stores and so on and so forth. So when you think of that, and none of them were called rioters, they were called protesters. But this event, even though the evidence indicates the farmers had nothing to do with the burning of the vehicle, the fact that they were there and turned the vehicle over, even if it was trying to ram them, this has been taken far and wide. So here's one of the protests in Senekal. Senekal against violence. I mean, how much clearer can that be? Stop farm murders. You can make a difference. Are you part of the solution or are you part of the statistics? Are you a talker or are you a doer? Life is precious. Are you ready, prepared? And you are responsible for your family. And these are good messages on this well-thought-out banner. Now, interestingly, Malema said at Senekal, outside the very court where two of these murderers are awaiting trial, there are no white farmers being killed in South Africa. Now, I don't know how he can say that, on what evidence, and how is he defining it? What is he meaning? Has he changed the definition of all these words? Does he mean they're not being killed, they're being executed? He's doing a sort of Clintonista on the terminology here, I'm sure, because it's patently obvious farmers are being killed. Now, these are some of the EFF crowd at Senekal, and you can see they've got a more threatening demeanor. Now, these are the Boer Legion, and they're wearing commando uniforms, and some of them were gathered at this confrontation just in this last week. Here's Skalk van der Merwe, who's one of the leaders in that area of Free South Africa movement. And I don't know, just look at that chap's face. You can sort of see a bit of fear on the EFF side. The police had put barbed wire to prevent the two groups coming together, but they apparently were able to go around this one barbed wire, were coming towards these farmers, and came to a skiddy halt. And they did not go any further, and whatever they saw made them change. And next thing you can see, the leaders are sending the people back, but you can see the EFF chap's got a harder job to sort of keep his people back in a sense. These folks don't need much control. They're self-disciplined, standing firm. And this was the group of anarchic rioters, according to SATV. Anarchic rioters. Like, that's anarchy. The most dangerous job in the world is being a farmer in South Africa. Far more dangerous than being a bomb disposal expert in a war zone like Iraq. Farmers are being murdered at a rate four times more than even the police. And being a policeman in South Africa is one of the most dangerous jobs in the world, you would have thought. Farmers in South Africa are being killed at a far higher rate than our soldiers ever were in any and all of the wars this country has ever been involved in. We lost in 27 years of war in Southwest Africa and in Angola. 650 men were killed. Men were killed in action over a 27-year period. And yet, we have lost how many thousands of farmers? And we're not counting other civilians being murdered in this country every year. So it's an absolutely extraordinary thing that you can say we lost less soldiers in war than we are losing every year through murder. This is worse than war. In fact, even this article in New Zealand newspaper, the largest daily newspaper in New Zealand, said South Africans are being killed at a rate of war. That is no exaggeration. We've lost more people in 1 year, if you take all population groups combined, than the Americans have lost in the whole of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars combined. And that's over the last, 17 years? So, the average. Worldwide, 6 people per 100,000 of the population die every year. Or murdered, sorry, murdered. 6 is the world's average. 6 per 100,000. The South African average is 34, which is bad. That's 500 times worse than what it would be for the national world average, 500% worse. The southern police officials are 55 per 100,000. Honduras, the most dangerous country in the world, is 90 per 100,000. Caracas, the most dangerous city in the world, is 119,000. But in 2016, it was 156 per 100,000 South African commercial farmers. Actually, it's gotten a lot worse. These statistics are too low. We've shown it's way over the 200 mark, 220 per 100,000. Now, here, the Transvaal Agricultural Union, now they keep the word Transvaal Agricultural Union, even though Transvaal has been cut into several provinces now, in Mpumalanga and Gauteng and Limpopo and all that, Northwest Province. So, still, you see on the left, the dark column is attacks, numbers of attacks per year. And then on the right, you've got in the lighter color, how many murders per year. You can see the numbers of attacks recorded by the Transvaal Agricultural Union, which has taken the brunt of the attack, but it's not all the country. You can see the number of attacks are increasing. The number of murders are not increasing much, but that's only because the farmers are fighting back and being more cautious and being more careful, taking more precautions. You'll notice there's vastly more attacks than there are murders, even though some of the attacks result in 2, 3, or 4 members of the family being killed at one place. So the vast majority of times, the farmers, even though they're outnumbered, even though the attackers have the benefit of surprise and have better weapons in most cases, and more often than not, this is something that's not being reported on much, But far more often than not, the farmers are winning, are able to either chase off the attackers or kill or injure them, or in some cases apprehend them. So just taking, for example, 1st of January 2017 to 31st of July 2017. So this is a 7-month period. And you can see the attacks and the amount of murders and so on. You can get a bit of a feel for also how attacks tend to be more on Thursday and Friday and Monday also, but that's because Sunday night into Monday morning, those are some of the most dangerous times. Notice, by far, the worst area of the country is Gauteng. That's where most of the murders take place and attacks. So, on average, a farmer's been killed every week. But there's a lot more farm attacks. So here you can see, during 2019, last year, there were 453 farm attacks. There were 48 farm murders. So there's 365 days in a year, so there's 1.5 attacks every day on average. And we got 52 weeks in a year, so basically you've got a murder of a farmer roughly every week. And so here you have the 2018 stats, and there it was again. Notice some of these stats. The oldest victim, 87. Average number of attackers, 3. Most numbers of attackers involved, 11 in that particular month that was documented there. May 2019, these are the analysis of the stats. Notice vastly more of the attacks take place at night. Overwhelmingly more at night than during the daytime. Yet, ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa claimed at the United Nations, internationally, on American media, there are no murders of farmers, and then he added white farmers in South Africa. Categoric. Which is patently false. You just have to turn to a newspaper, and you can see in just 56 hours there were 6 attacks and 2 murders. You can read Dr. Philip Du Toit's book, which about a decade ago came out, speaking about the Great Land Scandal, which, while he's focusing on the disaster of the thousands of farms that the government had appropriated and was giving to and subsidizing, and how there were economic disasters, but he brought in the farm attacks and farm murders and the complicity of the government then. And then, 6 years ago, out came the book Land of Sorrow, which we have in our library, which makes very hard reading. It has the names and the dates and the details of the murders of, and in here are over 3,000 victims, farmers and their family members. You have victim stories published in the books Farm Murders, and of course there's other books that have come out too. One farm murderer, I've covered his picture up because he's showing an ugly, obscene picture expression to people while he's going into court. This one farm murderer who was convicted of murdering 4 white farmers said he hates whites and murdering them was just like going to work. Mainstream media and liberals are dead quiet about this, and they say there's no racial motive in these attacks, even though the murderers themselves say there is. And so the international murder rate, can see Southern farmers by this stage had gone up to 198 per 100,000. It's now over 220. The Transvaal Agricultural Union recorded between 1991 and 2009. That's 11 years old stat, but it's hard to get these statistics. TAL recorded over 2,000 attacks and 1,266 murders that they knew and documented between 1991 and 2009. The South African Agricultural Union, which of course has a wider area of concern, recorded over 10,000 farm attacks and 1,541 murders between 1994 and 2008. 12 years out of date stats, but still, you get the impression of what's going on. Plainly, from the beginning, most attacks fail. Most farmers, even though outnumbered and surprised, manage to successfully defend their farms. That is something which should be an encouragement. How can you tell the truth being told? If Facebook blocks it, and Twitter deletes it, and Google hides it, and YouTube bans it, and your government forbids it, and the media brands it a conspiracy theory, you can be sure they're not trying to protect the truth. They're trying to protect themselves from the truth. Isaiah 5:20-23, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous man. Police Commissioner Seely refuses to acknowledge that the murder of farmers is an issue requiring special police attention. Refuses to have a special task force. Although, when there was an upsurge in cash and transit robberies, he created a special task force and brought that down dramatically. One thing that our old police used to have, the Southern Police, the real police, they had task forces for different groups, you know, murder and robbery and so on. They had vice squad. Under Mbeki, they scrapped them all. Cape Town's the only police force in the country, and that's the Metro Police, which is not under the National Police, that even has a vice squad. The rest of the country, they scrapped the vice squad. Who needs a vice squad? And they don't have a special farming unit, and that's after Mbeki got rid of all the commandos as well. Disarmed the commandos, dismantled the commandos in 2003, and after that, farm murders increased dramatically. So what's the truth behind farm terrorism in South Africa? Afroforum has noted the term farm murders is misleading, and the term farm terror and farm tortures is more suitable. Farmers in South Africa are now being murdered at a rate of 220 per 100,000 per year. Here's the stats, and by the way, you notice it goes all the way back to 1990, each year, all the way through to 2020, and this is from Gauteng, Northwest, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Natal, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, West Cape, and the Free State, and all the way along showing you the murders and the attacks. And you can see, if you get to the grand total, now this is Afroforum stats. Now, the reason why these statistics are different is because everyone's dealing with their own research, and our biggest problem is the central police do not give us statistics. They refuse to separate farm murders, they refuse to acknowledge it, they hide lot them, they put, you can have a person tortured to death, and it's called armed robbery, and they change names. We had this just recently close by in Rosebank, where at a police forum meeting with the community, they were talking about, you know, this last month was a good month, we only had one murder. And so the our accountant at the time, Mr. Neil Hurth, said, are you talking about the grocery shop owner? He said, no, that wasn't a murder. They shot him dead. No, that was an armed robbery. So who was the murderer? Oh, no, that was somebody else. And so you start to learn that they redefine things. It's like Eisenhower turning prisoners of war at the end of the world in the Second World War into disarmed enemy forces, DEFs. So that they were under other losses. And we've got a whole book down how he concealed 1.1 million German prisoners of war that he starved to death in camps under DEF because, in fact, more German prisoners died after the war than in prison camps and died during the war, during all the bombing, shooting and everything else. And Eisenhower took the lion's share of that, even more than Stalin, because of his policy. And it was discovered he had done an accounting phrase, changed them from POWs to DEFs. And so our government is concealing a lot of the murders that take place by putting them under false categories. But Afroforum has got these stats, and here they've got 5,437 attacks that they've documented, and 2,067 murders that they know and have got the details and so on. So the databases of Tau, Afroforum, they're all trying their best with what they've got, and the police aren't helping. In fact, Mbeki forbade the police from giving statistics on crime in total for years even, not just in farm murders. So any form of justice is incredibly rare, and the criminal justice system is spectacularly failing to effectively prosecute most of the perpetrators of these attacks. But Ernst Roots has been very bold. He's the leader of Afroforum, and he's published the book Kill the Boer. And it was very notable that when he came before Parliament, was it 2 years ago, to speak against the expropriation right compensation, how the member of Parliament for the ACDP, Steve Swart, did the dirty work for the ANC by attacking in the most vile way Ernst Roots. And there were so many people on the ACDP Facebook page saying, burn in hell ACDP, you'll never get my votes again, and things like that. They were so shocked that a Christian could attack, and Ernst Roots was factual, he was objective, he was doing what the ACDP should be doing in Parliament. And yet they were so into cravenly seeking the approval of The ANC and EFF were cheering and smiling and laughing while Steve Swart attacked Ernst Roets publicly and destroyed their own support base. Just take this, for example, this character, Willem Katana. He was only 28 years old when he massacred an entire family, and he said, "I killed them because they were white." That's his testimony in court. Down below here, you've got the two murderers caught for murdering famous authority historian Dr. Warwick Anthony Dorning, who was a history expert in the Southern Bush War. And notice the man on the right is Howick's SAPS police inspector. The amount of times you find police and army and NIS agents are the people who are either killed, captured, apprehended at the scene, taking part in the farm attack. And this is documented now by Ernst Roets in his book, Kill the Boer. Here's a picture taken from a closed-circuit TV camera just before a farm attack. Notice the military-grade jammer in this backpack. Now, this is something that blocks all cell phone signals for up to 500 meters. And so you can imagine, a farm attack begins, person picks up the phone, calls for help. Normally his wife would be calling for help while he's manning the weapons and so on. And the phone's jammed so that the neighbors don't hear, so that they can conceal the attack. This is a military-grade cell phone jammer. Does anyone here happen to have a cell phone jammer? Do you know anyone who's got a cell phone jammer? Serious.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
That's what I get from.
And disturbing. Farming families are tied up, cut with machetes, pitchforks, burned with boiling water or hot irons, dragged behind vehicles, raped and mutilated. Incomprehensible savagery. I apologize for that picture. That's the only ugly picture I'm going to show in this presentation, because I don't believe in dishonoring the victims by showing horrible pictures like that. But Kill the Boer is a book about the brutal reality of farm attacks in South Africa and how the ANC government is complicit, accessories in this crisis. It's argued in Kill the Boer book that the Southern government should be regarded as complicit due to a variety of reasons. First of all, they deprioritized the crime despite the worsening crisis. Could this be done anyway? At one point, when Peter Mulder was head of the Freedom Front and in Parliament, he stood up and he spoke about a brutal, savage, racist attack. Three white men attacked a black family, tied them up, tortured them, and he spoke on this at great length and so on. Then he said, "Would you agree with me? This is a brutal, racist, hate crime," and they all agreed. And he said, "Although actually, I got the facts wrong. These were three black men who attacked this white family, and they said these things," and it was actually the exact reverse. "Are any of you still concerned?" And of course, if it had been the other way, every single news head, talking head around the world would be screaming blue murder, the UN would be involved and so on. Ah, but because it's white victims, who cares? And they deserve to be killed anyway. And so this deprioritizing of the crime, the negative stereotyping of the white farmers in particular, very negative. The romanticizing of violence inflicted upon farmers and the propagation of hatred from political platforms, as well as scorning and ridiculing the victims of these attacks. The Kill the Boer book reveals accounts of the direct involvement of members of the ruling ANC, the Southern government, where they have recruited people straight out of prison and tasked them to attack farms and paid and equipped them and supported them and provided logistics. And the South African Police Service in particular, helping with the planning and execution of these attacks. For example, farmers who survived, able to say how they were told, "When this is what's in your gun cupboard, this is where your gun safe is," they got it all from the local police. Where, remember, the police have to come and inspect where your gun safes are, on-site inspections, all this sort of thing, where they have been informed by the local police what you've got, where you've got it, who's there, and so on. I remember when we were told that if you go and travel, tell the police, you know, that your house is going to be unoccupied so you can keep an eye on it. You wouldn't dream of doing that now. I mean, that would be insane. That would be like an invitation to come and loot your house. And these are the gangsters running our police service. It's argued that a looming process of ethnic cleansing should be regarded as a serious threat and something we must campaign to prevent. The communists are like cockroaches. They hate the light. You shine the light and they scurry to the corners. And so it's important to shine the light and speak on us, on radio and letters to editor, publications, social media. The complicity of the South African media is also indicated by the analysis of news reports, which clearly indicate biased reporting, leading to a vilification and negative stereotyping of white farmers in particular, so that at the end of the day, a man like this can be tortured to death by people who feel no conscience because they feel totally justified that they're doing something good. Because he's evil, because he's white and he's a farmer, therefore he deserves to be tortured to death. And that's a result of conditioning in the school textbooks, from the political speeches, the media, Hollywood, SATV, Cape Times, Argus, the whole lot. So in the Killer Boer book, they've got these stats. When on the blue is reported incidents of violence on farms. So there's 16 incidents here studied. But the red is the media mentioned per incident. So white on black violence, if there's 16 incidents, there'll be 75 reports in the media on it. However, when there's black on white, 206 incidents, you get 7 mentions in the media. And they're not front page either. That's just mentioned somewhere. Black on black, for every 15 incidents, you might get 6 mentions in the media. That'll also be pretty minor. But white on white, if there's 3 incidents, there'll be 10 mentions in the media. So, now that's Afrikaans and English media. You look at the Afrikaans media, it's not much difference. They will over-report any white on black violence. They'll under-report any black on white violence. Black versus black, who cares? White on white, okay, that's interesting. And in the English media, same pattern again. So that plainly the media is not reporting all the news that's fit to print, without fear or favour, without bias. The horrific levels of torture that often accompanies these crimes, and I must say, it is sick. I have been a missionary to the persecuted for over 38 years. I have seen about as vile stuff as one could not ever imagine. I have seen congregations wiped out in Mozambique. I've seen a pastor crucified in the front of his church. I've walked through a church of easily 1,200 corpses inside one church in Rwanda, decomposing corpses. And I've read books like Hellstorm, documenting the satanic, demonic atrocities committed by the Red Army and other allies on the defeated Germans at the end of the Second World War. Not just during the war, but afterwards. Demonic beyond demonic. And it's the same quality. Okay, not the same quantity. No country ever had more hatred poured out in it than Germany. Either from the air with the thousands of tons of high explosive bombs incinerating whole cities. But what was done to them in the years after the war? The systematic... We're talking about so demonic you could not comprehend it. But just to mention one example. Crucifying women to the farm doors. Nails in each hand and feet. Russians did that. That's what's done in South Africa on some of these farms. They have done that to little babies and little girls on the kitchen table. This is one of the exhibits at a murder of a 64-year-old woman, Nikki Simpson, the drill that they used to drill her feet. They murdered her dog. The iron used to torture somebody. What's this got to do with crime? This is demonic, savage, communist. It's exactly the same as what you read in Hellstorm, what the Soviet Marxists did on the people that they had been propagandized to hate for years, and when they got the chance to do it, what did it? The role that farmers should play in society and the unique circumstance that farmers are in also shows why you cannot have a society that survives without farmers. You can't have people in cities without farmers. In fact, for centuries and millenniums, for most of world history, most people have been rural. In fact, in my lifetime, 1960s, the world tipped from being mostly rural to being mostly urban. And right now, it's a lot more urban. That couldn't happen unless you had commercial farmers. For many years, an average farmer with a wooden plow could only provide enough food for one family. And with the invention of the metal plow, one farmer could feed 3 families. once they got to tractors, they could have one farmer feed 60 families. And now with the modern methods, they can have one farmer feeding hundreds of families. We had in 1994, when Mandela became president, 70,000 farmers in South Africa. 70,000 farmers. And they fed 100 million people. Our population was only 28 million back in 1994. Since then, our population has doubled. We've got over 60 million now. But we're down to under 30,000 commercial farmers. We've lost more than 40,000 farmers. Something like 3,000 have been murdered. The rest have either died of natural causes or fled. And their children are not willing to take over the task for some reason. And they're living in Australia or Canada and so on. And so the situation in South Africa is, instead of 70,000 farmers feeding 100 million people, we now have 30,000 farmers feeding 40 million people. But our population is 60 million. And whereas South African farmers used to feed people all the way up to the Congo, now we can't even feed our own country. We've got to import food. For the first time in the history of South Africa, we have to import food. Places like Switzerland protect their farmers because they believe, as a neutral country, the most important thing is farm security. And if they can't provide everything they need, especially their food themselves, if they've been totally blockaded by everyone else. And Switzerland's been through world wars a few times. They had to be 100% self-sufficient. So in Switzerland, they seriously protect and look after their farmers. And you can't take over farmland and sell it outside the family, and you can't sell up your farm to become a mall or to build a block of flats on it. They really protect their farms in Switzerland. I think Austria would be very similar. But here, there's no protection for the farmers. It's staggering. When the most dangerous occupation in South Africa is not that of being a policeman or a fireman, you should know something's wrong. When the most dangerous occupation is that of the person who promotes food security and creates jobs, you should know something is seriously wrong. The sad truth should employ intensive discussion and be considered a priority anywhere in the world. If this was happening almost anywhere in the world, it would be one of the greatest priorities to stop it. But not in South Africa. Here the government is complicit in it and encourages it and inspires it and supports it and protects the murderers and does everything they can to vilify and demonize and disarm the farmers. Ernst Root's book Kill the Boer was launched on a cold winter's morning with singer Adam Tuss singing songs about farmers and the farming industry. And the morning of the launch saw reports of an 86-year-old farmer from Hartbeespoort who'd been attacked on his farm the day before. Kill the Boer does not mince its words and details on how cruel farm murders are and why these cannot be regarded as ordinary crimes. Ordinary criminals do not take hours to torture people to death. It investigates the loaded statements by politicians and how these may result in an increase in farm attacks and murders. I don't know how many of you have seen this clip, video, hearing it with sound, what it sounds like. Shoot to kill! Pah, pah. Shoot to kill! Pah, pah. Kill the farmer! Kill, kill, kill the farmer! Shoot to kill! And all stomping and shouting. Now, you listen to this. And there are thousands of these people who work and walk amongst us. Some of whom are church members in Cape Town, by the way. What is wrong? What kind of sick, demented, demonic, deceived people could be involved in supporting a political party so vile as that of the EFF? And yet you have got people in churches. You have got pastors in churches who openly support the EFF and walk around with EFF t-shirts. In one section, Roots mentions that Julius Malema answered under cross-examination in court why they had stopped singing Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer. And he said because black farmers might be depicted as targets erroneously. Therefore, he has stopped singing Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer, and now rather sings Dubula Ibonu, or Kill the Boer, who's always understood the Bono, the white man, the white farmer. So his idea is that he didn't, when he is asked to apologize for saying kill the farmer, he says, yes, no, we're not going to sing that in case somebody accidentally thinks of killing a black farmer. It's kill the Boer, kill the white farmer. And somehow or another, this does not get prosecuted. So immediately, old Malema attacked Ernst Rutz that his book was racially divisive. What do you suggest we do for racial harmony? Kill the Boer, which he is singing even now in Seneca. The book also points out the mainstream media's double standards in terms of reporting on farm murders and reference to race. If a white man commits a crime, it is mentioned. For example, BBC, CNN, SATV, white farmers stormed the magistrate's court in Senegal. Oh, but if a black or Muslim or Arab, never mentioned race. Race is not mentioned unless it's a white person, then the race is mentioned. What's this for? One statistic shows that a publication like the Daily Sun, which is a pathetic scandal rag, not worthy of even being kitty litter or starting a braai with, but it uses graphics in 69% of the reports covering white and black crimes, but in only 21% of reports on black and white crimes. And a publication like Huffington Post SA, which is also not worthy of even kindling your fire, they don't use any graphics if it's a case of black and white crimes. Now, notice we had a massive gap from 2006 to 2010 where the police were forbidden by Julius Malema to provide any statistics on any crimes. That was because the crimes could have... Well, you could see with the direction they were going, you know, and then suddenly you're not allowed to know what was happening during them. So the civil servants who live on our taxpayer money were not allowed to give out, and the police reports were, what are they saying? Because they weren't using any numbers. But anyway, here you can see the blue is the farm attacks, which is obviously spiking, and the red are the farm murders. In a sense, you can see the farm murders were worse under Mandela and under Mbeki because they were generally not yet ready and prepared. They weren't like farmers in Rhodesia who were seriously secured, always armed and ready. I mean, I grew up in Rhodesia where every woman that you saw on the farms, revolver in the hip or 9mm, submachine gun slung over the shoulder, whether they were in the shop, whether they were out in the fields, whether they were hanging up the washing, they were always armed. And so the Rhodesians had this mentality, you've got to be armed all the time. South Africans had not yet reached that mentality of being armed and ready and in condition orange every day. And so the murders were more at the beginning, under particularly Mandela and Mbeki. That was when it was the worst. But the farmers, of course, while there's less farmers also, the farmers that have remained must be some of the toughest people on the planet. Being a white farmer in South Africa is not for sissies. So here they're showing the occasions between midnight and 6 in the morning, the kind of attacks between 6 and midday, the attacks between noon and 6 o'clock attacks, and then the largest number between 6 p.m. and midnight, the number of attacks. So the hourly distribution of farm attacks. So you can't assume a farm attack won't happen during daylight hours. It's more likely to happen at night. I've been visiting and ministering with farmers in the Free State and the Transvaal, and you know, at night the sun starts set, they barricade, and everyone's got their duties, and even the little kids all know what they're to do if the farm's attacked at night. And it's quite an uncanny experience to be with them, knowing these people, especially in the Free State, how they are targeted, and every single day they have to be on condition orange, ready. Division of victims according to age groups. Now, just look at this. From 0 to 14, 253 victims. That's between 1990 and 2012, according to age groups. 253 children under 14. 15, 20, 108. Now, in the 20s, 286. 30s, 380. 40s, 514. Plainly, most of the targets are older people. People in their 50s, 828. People in their 60s, 906. People in their 70s, 848. Plainly, most of the victims are elderly people. In many cases, they're still farming their farms because their children are now overseas, not wanting to follow in their parents' footsteps. And so you've got farmers in their 60s and 70s who should have retired, but they're still farming, keeping employers employed, keeping the stores stocked with food. But why would you be killing children? What purpose is that? That's terrorism. That's nothing to do with crime. Now, the analysis, again, from Kill the Boer, 64% of those being murdered are farmers. 26% are direct family, 7% are the workers, and then visitors are 1.2%. So it's disproportionate, but it shows you what's going on. This book is more than simply figures and statistics over. It's a story of Sue Howarth, who was murdered when attackers opened fire on her and her husband while they were sleeping, 2017. Someone who loved horses, in the hospital before she died. It's a story of Roger and Christine Solick, who the judge said in sentencing the murderers that a great measure of rage and venom had been evident at the crime scene. Roger Solick, Christine Solick, murdered 2017. It's a story of 66-year-old Dries Steenkamp, who was shot dead on his farm outside Ladenburg in Mpumalanga. It's a story of Vanessa Stafflu, whose 3- and 5-year-old children ran into the darkness after they'd seen their mother murdered right in front of them. How can any 3- or 5-year-old ever live a normal life after experiencing, witnessing something like that? The story of Johan Stradom, whose skull was cracked with a piece of metal after she was dragged behind his buggy on a dirt road until he died of a burst liver. Why would you do that? And yet, Commissioner Seely says, that's not murder, that's just robbery. It's a story of a mother who lost the will to live after a 21-year-old son, Kyle Stolz, was murdered in a farm close to Bloemfontein. Story of Ati Potchieff, who was stabbed 151 times with a garden fork, panga, and knife, after which his wife, Vilna, and 2-year-old daughter, Vilhelmina, were murdered. Vilna and Ati and Vilhelmina. Why would you do this? Now, of course, not only white farmers have been killed. Elsa Mokonat and Augustine Konjana, 2 farm workers, were strangled during a farm attack and shot in the stomach. And I struggled to find a picture of him nowhere on the internet. Can't even find a news article on it. Although they are mentioned in the book by Ernst Rutz, but not a picture to be found. Not even a news report found on the internet. Last year in the Free State, a black commercial farmer was shot dead by attackers. His wife was kicked and shot. But again, can't find a picture of him either. Can't even find a news report. It's pointed out in the cover of the book that the content is not for sensitive viewers. But the fact is, no South African can afford not to read this book. We're meant to be our brother's keeper. We're meant to love our neighbor. The facts contained in this book are essential for any person who wants to deliver constructive input in the debate on farm murders and farm attacks. It empowers readers with knowledge of immeasurable value when being asked why farm murders are different from other murders and why the South African government is complicit in it. Now, I have lived in a realm of ministry to persecute church, and I must tell you that if ignorance is bliss, I suppose knowledge isn't exactly bliss. But having studied books like Tortured for Christ, and having met many of the persecuted church, and having studied Amnesty International's reports and International Society for Human Rights, and knowing exactly what happens in Mozambique and Angola, you can imagine when I ended up as prisoners of SNASP security in Mashava security prison in Maputo, my imagination did run riot. And that's a bit of trauma too. But on the other hand, it enabled me to survive because I knew what to expect. And I was able to deal with this interrogator who introduced himself as, "I am the devil." I said, "You're not the devil." He said, "Oh, I'm the devil. I'm not even a Marxist and Leninist, I'm a Stalinist. I was trained in Czechoslovakia." And I had a 6-hour dialogue with this torturer who had in his office, you can call it that, a leather chair with arm and leg straps. I mean, a chair with leather arm and leg straps. Batteries, car batteries with electric tongues and crocodile clips, which are obviously going to be used to charge me. That's the only kind of charge you get out there. And what looked like a table full of hardware tools. And because I knew Marxist and I was, well, instead of him using his tools of the trade on me, I was having a dialogue on politics and economics and history and theology and all the rest of it because I understood how the communists think. And so I walked out there with my fingernails intact and all the rest of it. Knowing about it might have cost me loss of sleep, but it also, I think, saved my life and limbs because you've got to know knowledge is power. The content is graphic, but we no longer have the luxury to be sensitive about the facts. The book, Kill the Boer, is an important contribution to the debate on farm murders and attacks writes one crime expert. Dr. Johan Berger, consultant for the Institute for Security Studies, who was a policeman, said this is particularly true in a time which farm murders and tax have become an uncomfortable, thorny political topic. This book will hopefully contribute to the debate, he said, and will wake up some of us who are still completely ignorant as to the seriousness of the situation. We are dealing with demonic Marxism, who is not interested in stopping at the farmers. They're just the most vulnerable and remote to start on. They have every intention of going further. Dr. Theo de Jager, chairperson of the World Farmers Organization, said that Roots tackles the topic of farmers in a comprehensive manner. He writes about the facts and figures as well as the fears, anger and worries that have become part of the DNA of the farming community. Just look at this though. Attacks on farmers has absolutely skyrocketed in recent days. But the murders have not increased that much, showing that our farmers are getting more prepared, more alert, and more often than not are able to neutralize and turn the attack around. And in fact, there are farmers who've succeeded in killing or putting to flight all of the attackers. And sometimes they've caught them only to find out that they had to be released because it was an NIS operative or an officer in the South African National Defence Force or a person who is an inspector in the South African Police Service. So we've got all kinds of intriguing stories that come out when you look. De Jager said that if you visited the scene of a farm attack with the signs of torture, you could lose your appetite for theoretical debates on the relevance of statistics and figures. And that's why Peter Kronewald, Member of Parliament for Freedom Front, has challenged in Parliament President Ramaphosa. I challenge, he said, to come to a funeral of a victim of farm murder. He said, I'll go to any funeral you choose for me if you will come with me to funeral of a farm murder. And of course, Cyril Ramaphosa has not accepted. Not even talk about going to examine the crime scene. Just come to the funeral. Just have one. Cyril Ramaphosa will not respond to things like that because he's a pathological liar. There are no farm murders in South Africa. No white farmers have been killed in South Africa, says Cyril Ramaphosa internationally. The stats are there to help us understand. Now, notice the Western Cape is no longer immune. These things are happening in the Western Cape. These are the statistics that AfriForum is putting out showing the attacks percentage per day, and you can also see which it's almost every day of the week now being spread out. And but the time of the day, of course, it's important for us to get an understanding of when you're most vulnerable. But make no mistake, although the night hours are the most dangerous, attacks will happen during the day. That's why there's locks, and that's why there needs to be alertness. Notice this is the red indicates the highest levels of murders. So you can see Cape Town is one of the dangerous areas. Obviously, the large number of people here, most of those murders might take place out in Khayelitsha and Mitchell's Plain, but it still is it's still affecting us, and it spills over into every suburb at some stage. Now, somebody else has analysed. These are South African Police Service statistics. Murders in South Africa. 30% happen from arguments and misunderstandings. And by the way, they don't tell you this here. Most murderers are under the influence of alcohol or drugs at the time of the murder. Yeah. Just an interesting thing. Most murders in South Africa statistically take place on Friday and Saturday nights. Most murders take place in and around shebeens, bars, and places where alcohol is served. Just a point that if you avoid places where alcohol and drugs are served on the weekend, you're increasing your survival rates enormously. It's foolish for young people to go into those places. You go to bars, you are going into places where, because a lot of murders are not planned. They're actually just argumentative and, you know, road rage, and some idiot bumps into somebody and bar doesn't like your reaction. Next thing you know, a fight breaks out. That's 30% of all murders in South Africa is just arguments. Something that, you know, somebody, the Bible says a soft answer turns away wrath. There's a lot of things that can be solved just by not reacting. Crime in South Africa, every day, 44 murders. This is across the board now, speaking about all population groups. Sexual offence, 181 a day. Attempted murder, 44. Assault, 509. Common assault, 473. By the way, common assault can be just swearing at a person or threatening a person, whereas grievous bodily harm is physical. That's assault. Aggravated robbery, 290 a day. Knowing the facts helps us to be more alert, recognizing what we're dealing with, reported cases, crime stats, murders, and so on, people killed every day in South Africa. So they're saying officially about 20,000 people are murdered every year, 57 people a day. In the last year, while most of those would be men die younger for a lot of reasons, but 2,930 were women and 985 were children. And these are all the different crime category statuses from the Southern Police Service. And again, all these different things, GBH, grievous bodily harm, that sort of thing. These are stats, and notice the red indicates where there's increases. Some increases, like murders, increased 25%. Attempted murder, 12%, and so on. Now, these are farm attacks just in 1 week of February of this year. And it's got the names of the people and the number of attackers and the type of weapons used and so on. So these are just stats that you can get from different areas. But here follows a compilation of quotes and policies from ANC leaders. All white people are criminals and should be treated as such. We need to take their property, deny them job opportunities, treat them as second-class citizens. White people are rapists, dogs, and cowards. We need to sing songs about how they should be mowed down and murdered. White people are in a minority, and that means they must have fewer rights than the rest of us. Is that so? What happens in Britain and America? No, minorities get greater rights. But in South Africa, minorities have no rights. Absolutely, that's how democracy works, they said. And if you dare to protest against these views, we must tell them to keep your mouths shut because they're racist. They're simply getting what they deserve. People deserve to be stabbed 151 times and dragged behind a bucky and so on. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous. The war on whites in South Africa is also seen in economics through Black Economic Empowerment Affirmative Action, BBBEE, job reservation, racial quotas, right down to sports teams, all of which are designed to keep whites, and particularly white males, out of government and commercial employment. And I might add, the coloured people say it's even worse for them, how they're mistreated. But the violent, vicious, brutal, sadistic tortures and murders of farmers and their family members defies description. Farm attacks in South Africa are 700% higher than any other country in the world. AfriForum has documented multiple cases of incitement to genocide and menacing threats against whites on social media. Take ANC councillor Bekenkosi Mevelasi, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. I hate the Boer. Kill the Boer, kill farmer. Boers and Nigerians should be slaughtered. This is a man in the Gauteng Arts and Culture Department. Arts and Culture Department. I want to cleanse this country of all white people. We must act as Hitler did to the Jews. White people in South Africa deserve to be hacked and killed. You must be bushed alive, whatever that means, and skinned, and your offspring used as garden fertilizer. That's the Minister of Gauteng Arts and Culture. A protest was given against him, and he was required to write an apology letter. Wow. Whereas somebody who used a naughty word was sent to prison for a few years. Notice what's behind this man with a kill all whites sign. Is that a police vehicle we see behind him? Obviously not bothered that the police will be offended by that. Now imagine somebody having a sign that was reversed. Imagine a kill all black sign. Could that be hate speech? Could that be incitement to violence? Could that be a crime? Would that be unacceptable? But some are kill all whites. Nothing to see here. Lavuyo Max Menziwa, I hate white people. Just get me a bazooka or an AK-47 so I can do the right thing and kill these demon-possessed humans. Now, doubtless, people like this think that they are righteous, and this is virtue signaling, and their friends will be giving them thumbs up and love and care signs, because what's wrong with that? This man works in Anglo-American. He says, white South Africans, your time is up. In the near future, you'll pray and wish you were black. Your time is up. Pack and go. Suffer the consequence. God is not your side. And this is so many full of swear words that have to be covered up, but basically it's bad. And then all whites, you know, we're going to kill them all. And speaking about our farm killers should keep on killing farmers and if possible raping the women and little daughters and possibly infecting them with AIDS. That will teach them not to mess with us. Why would this be considered in any way acceptable to take some baby doll, evidently white, and have racist tied around it and rope around its neck? Is this funny? I mean, is this socially acceptable? And that, by the way, is ANC Women's League with those yellow t-shirts. I use my gun to rob and kill Indians and whites. Please, fellas, join me. We have to rape the kids with AIDS virus too. Post it on social media. Well, fortunately, Zuckerberg isn't worried about that because that's not against our community standards. But if you posted something saying that the Wuhan virus is manufactured in a lab, that's against community standards. I'm the Messiah of our time. I will give free land to my people. Unlike Jesus or Nelson Mandela and his friends, I don't need to go to a stupid prison to save my people, says Malema. You know, how people like that, what do they think is going to happen to them on the Day of Judgment? Spot the logical inconsistency. Kill the Boer, kill the racist, kill Afrikaans. Isn't that racist? Walking around with a tie around your neck is an intimidation tactic, reminding people that during the struggle, the ANC burned alive 1,000 black town councillors and teachers and others considered collaborators by putting an automobile tire on them, pouring gasoline over them, setting them alight, which is Winnie Mandela's signature, with a box of matches and our necklaces, we will liberate this country. So this is a very serious intimidation tactic, like what the IRA do with kneecapping Catholic girls who date a British policeman or something like that. So they kneecap them. They don't kneecap Protestants. The IRA kneecap Catholics, just like the ANC didn't necklace whites, they necklaced black people who were refusing to be intimidated by them. Very interesting. Now, you know who Andile Maxitama is? He's Blackland First. He's a political leader, registered. Very interesting. Just met this white chap who says he understands and respects what BLF stands for, Blackland First. Basically, do the same thing as black. He wished BLF luck. And on my part, if I met him in one of one, he must mean one on one, on that day of great reckoning, my machete won't hesitate. What's he saying? These white liberals who are on our side, we're going to kill them just as much as anyone else. Now here is this chap, Mufundu Dilwani, seated at his job with his Facebook friend, Nikedo Soda, both called for the killing of white babies, with Dilwani saying, we have no choice but to kill white babies, simply because they're going to grow and oppress our babies, so we kill white babies. When the right time comes, we'll chop off their heads, and they become headless white racists. This is posted on social media. This is somebody's culling the media of just, but don't worry, it doesn't violate community standards. It turns out the most racist people in the world are the ones crying racist all the time. The more they scream racist, they're probably the most guilty. How do you like this from Andile Mangetame, BLF leader again? Every time I hear the name Jesus, I'm reminded of white people. I'm glad he won't come back, because if he comes back, we'll kill him again, cremate his body. Well, good luck with that, Andile. Just see how far you get. When the Lord returns, he won't come as a lamb, he's coming as a lion next time. EFF leader Julius Malema declared he wanted to hit white men hard. We are cutting the throat of whiteness. Now, why would you use terms like that? Could you use these terms referring to any other racial group? Land of Sorrow documents the results. And these are just some of the victims of murder. And I don't want to show the horrible pictures, so just show the picture of the people as they should be remembered. Decent, hardworking people who were murdered by savage, demon-possessed Marxists targeting children. Why would they do that? And the people left behind. Now, these are just some of the survivors. And survivors who have been beaten this brutally. This is, well, it's war. Yes, exactly. It is war. If you've seen films like Plaas Moorter by Casey Hopkins, you would have met a lady like this who describes the murder of her father. And there are many, all the families are traumatized. The whole communities are traumatized. And as a memorial and as a protest, there is the cross copy with the names on it of thousands of victims who need to be remembered. There are museums where they are documenting the genocide of the Boer people. Now, this lovely lady whose testimony you get in the Plaas Moorder, The Killing Fields by Katie Hopkins, that documentary, her family all witnessed the brutal, sadistic murder of her husband and their father. But she has decided that she's not going to be a victim, and for the sake of her children, she is going to make his story known. She's gone overseas, she's spoken about, she's given the details, and she's bringing up her children to remember the father in a way, to honor him, and to bring justice for these. So they are a family that have chosen, we will not be victims. These are some Australians standing up against the farm murders. There are memorials being erected. There are articles that do come in the press. The South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry calculates for every farm murder, even attack, costs the South economy at least $2 million annually. That's based on annual contribution to the agricultural sector to the country's gross domestic product. Now, just think of those 40,000 farmers that are no longer with us because they've either retired, died, been murdered, or immigrated. All of them used to employ hundreds of people and feed tens of thousands of people. So the cost to the South African economy of losing 40,000 farmers net in the last 26 years. Think of the cost to our economy. Why have we got so many unemployed? Now, these are just some of the accused murderers. These are some of the people appearing in court, generally speaking, with no sense of guilt, because why should they feel guilty? They've done the right thing. These aren't human beings. These are Boers. These are farmers. They just deserve to be killed. They're whites. In order to understand some of the tortures, they've shown pictures like that in the courts to explain. Buried them alive. When Freedom Front member of parliament Peter Cronenwald reported on the horrific tortures being inflicted on white farmers in South Africa, I've watched this video clip, and you can Google it too. An ANC member of parliament was heard to jeer and shout, "Bury them alive." And there was laughter throughout the EFF and ANC members of parliament's benches in parliament. And he was describing the most sadistic murder techniques, such as with blow tortures and so on. And they laughed. He was talking about a little two-year-old girl being crucified on a kitchen table. And they laughed and said, "Bury them alive." And that included Zuma was in the parliament at that stage. They're all sitting there and they're giggling. This is why Ernst Rutte says this government is complicit. They've encouraged it and they don't want to stop it. Destruction is in its midst. Oppression and deceit do not depart from its streets. Endangered species of Africa is not just the rhino. Do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set. Is the war on farmers state-sponsored terrorism? Ernst Rutte says yes, it is. Geno race, side killing, genocide acts committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, racial or religious group. That's the definition of the UN in 1948. Now, they define 10 stages of genocide. Classification, us and them. Symbolization, people forced to identify themselves. Discrimination, systematic discrimination. We've got, 110 different anti-white laws in this country right now. Dehumanization, equated with animals, vermin, or disease. I remember that in Rwanda. They called the Tutsi Inyenzis, cockroaches. Dehumanize the victims. Organization, government creates special groups, paramilitary, to enforce their policies. Polarization, government broadcast propaganda to turn the populace against the group. Oh, that's been done all the time. SATV is endless polarization. Preparation, official action to remove or relocate people begins as they're trying to take farms. In fact, they've taken thousands of farms already by the willing buyer, willing seller, so far, but they now want to expropriate. And then persecution, beginning of murders, theft of property, trials and massacres. Well, that's been going on for a long time. That's been going on since Mandela's days. Extermination, wholesale elimination of the group. It's extermination and not murder because the people are not considered human. And then denial. The government denies it has committed any crime. Now, there used to be 8 actual stages of genocide in the 1996 definition, but Genocide Watch has since updated in 2012 to 10, and they've added in discrimination and persecution. Just take Susan Sontag, a Jewish professor, the white race is the cancer of human history. The cancer of human history. And so you look at how there's so many calling for the genocide of all whites. University professors all over America and Europe. And you can see the murder spreading over the country. Bring Me My Machine Gun was the song of Jacob Zuma. Kill the Boer Killer Farmer, Julius Malema. If you don't like that tax, leave South Africa. Who said that? Charles Nkagula, Minister of Safety and Security, at the same time chairman of the Southern Communist Party. So the Minister of Police, Minister of Law and Order, effectively, says if you don't like a tax, leave the country. That's the head of the police. Silent genocide. So back in 2011, Paul Kruger, not one Paul, but this is someone of the same name, submitted to the International Court of Criminal Court at The Hague a complaint against the ANC for calling for genocide in South Africa. Now, justice obviously seems to move very slowly there because we haven't seen much progress, but this has been brought before them. It's all brought about by lies. Lies are the foundation of genocide and race hate. The uproar in South Africa of the claims by the ANC that the 1913 Land Act dispossessed blacks is a blatant lie. It forms part of four core lies about South African history. Lie number one. There's a common belief in South Africa that the Native Land Act of 1913, under the British, by the way, shoved blacks on reserves, 7% of the land, and prohibited them from buying land in white areas. That whites forcibly removed blacks to these reserves and that these reserves were on the worst land in the country with no mineral riches and the whites kept the best land minerals for themselves. Now, if I was a black man, I might be tempted to want to believe that myth because it would ensure me eternal victimhood status and compensation for generations to come. Who doesn't want to be a victim? Unfortunately, it's a blatant lie and can be attributed to lack of reading ability or legal comprehension of journalists and historians, so-called, of this time. Fact. The truth is, first of all, the biggest platinum reserves in the world run through the former black homeland of Maputo-Tswana, now Northwest Province. The former nationalist government had no problem allocating this most mineral-rich area to the Tswana tribe for self-rule, although they already had a massive country called Botswana given to them by the British. Botswana is pretty huge. Remember, that was also part of this at one stage, as was Swaziland and Lesotho. So, originally, Botswana was called Bechuanaland. Blacks got two other massive countries from the British, Lesotho and Swaziland. So when they speak about 7%, they're not counting in Swaziland, Lesotho and Botswana, which used to all be parts of British-ruled Southern Africa. Line number two. Black homelands were on the worst land in South Africa. That is definitely not true. When you compare the rainfall map of South Africa, anyone with an elementary knowledge of South Africa can tell you the largest part of South Africa is called the Karoo. Basically, from the northwest divide between west and east, all the black tribes were east of this line because that's where you had the richest rainfall. And the sand people were west of it, as were the Afrikaans farmers, because this is the lowest rainfall and the least fertile part of the country. And that's just fact. It's a semi-desert comparable to Arizona or Nevada in the United States. Blacks never even entered this land, let alone settled it. Whites made it blossom, created successful sheep farming, producing meat of world quality in wilderness. Black settlements are found on the north and east coasts of South Africa. The east coast has a subtropical climate, the north a prairie-like clump with summer rainfall, thunderstorms. An exception is the Western Cape, where we have a Mediterranean climate and winter rainfall. But the northern and eastern parts of South Africa, with beautiful green grasslands and fertile soil, is where black tribes eventually coalesced, and this is the land they chose for themselves. Their eventual homelands were found on land they inhabited of their own free will. Nobody forced them there. The Afrikaners even have a song praising the greenness of Natal. Groen is die land van Natal. Perfect grazing area for cattle herding black people, which is why the Zulu settled there. Line number three. Blacks are indigenous South Africa and first settled it. Today, blacks in South Africa often tell Afrikaners and other minorities, such as coloureds, Indians, Chinese, Malays, adapt to their misrule and corruption or go home. Implying that we, though we have been born here, who hold legal citizenship through successful birthrights, should immigrate to Europe, Malaysia, India, or elsewhere. That only ones who have a legal claim to South Africa are blacks. Blacks believe they're indigenous to South Africa, but they're not. It's been proven by DNA research. We're all settlers in South Africa. Everyone. And you can see some people posting and causing an uproar when saying, well, actually, we all are, in fact, settlers, and we've all conquered different people's land and so on. But this ill-advised policy of expropriating land without compensation is based on a broad propaganda narrative of righting the wrongs of long ago and taking back what was stolen. In a word, restitution. But who stole the land? Where was it stolen? From whom was it stolen? When was it stolen? And how was it stolen? In fact, is it AfriForum or is it the Freedom Front that's had an offer out of a big money sum to anyone who can prove one case where whites stole the land from anyone? And that reward is still waiting for someone to claim it, you know, although Malema keeps talking about it. The fact is that Dutch settlers and voortrekkers purchased their land and settled and developed the wilderness at great personal sacrifice and cost. Truth does not fear investigation. Facts can ruin a good story. Marxist revolutionaries and agitators are using propaganda to whip up hatred for their political ends. If we were to consider real theft taking place in our time, we would recognize that nobody has stolen more from us than our government has. The greatest theft is from inflation, which is a hidden tax, taxation and corruption. The African Union Task Force on Corruption calculates that over 32% of the gross domestic product, the GDP, is stolen every year by governments in Africa. That's 14 times 1,400% of all the foreign aid received in Africa every year. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. If we could cut corruption down by just 10%, it would equal all the foreign aid pouring into Africa every year. Imagine if we could eradicate 50% of the corruption. Imagine if we could eradicate 90% of the corruption. And Incan does nothing. This isn't even pocket change. These guys steal trillions. Inflation has devalued the South African rand to 1/500th what was in 1980. This is what Stephen Mitford Goodson, one time director of the South Reserve Bank, gave me those stats. But I remember a survey of inflation undertaken by the Old Mutual reporting that in 1971 you could buy a car for about 1,000 rand. In fact, my father bought a car for 1,000 rand in 1971. In 1981, the same amount of money could buy a motorbike. In fact, I bought my first motorbike for about 1,000 rand as I came straight out the army. 1,000 rand, 250 Honda XL. Went to Mozambique. By 2001, the buying power of 1,000 rand had collapsed, so you could buy a bicycle. Now a good pair of running shoes can cost you way over 2,000 rand. Sorry? About 3,500 rand, yeah. The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. The theft of so much of our hard work and our ingenuity by corrupt, exorbitant taxation, rampant corruption by the ANC government is vastly greater than all other forms of poverty combined. How can you blame Jan van Riebeck for that? Over 1.4 trillion rand is lost to corruption in South Africa every year. And they want to whinge and whine about Cecil Rhodes' statue. So just to give an idea, this is quite an old stat. This goes back about 15 years. But still, to show you what you could do, this was 2010. This came out in 2010. What could you buy with, now we're speaking about trillions stolen. 216 billion rand could build 4 million homes. 25 billion could build 1,000 schools. 50 billion could host 10 World Soccer Cups. And 375 billion could build 10 new hospitals and run them for 18 years. And just to show you what's being lost by the corruption. Yet President Zuma once said famously, corruption doesn't hurt anyone. It hurts everyone. Okay. This is in dollars, but it works for rand. We've got a 100 rand bill like they've got a $100 bill. So, this is normal currency. We've seen it. Let me tell you, you can't buy with this. What I could buy with a one rand note. Well, the 1 rand note when I was growing up was worth more than 100 rand notes worth now. Okay, 10,000 rand. You could fit it in your pocket. Now, this is, believe it or not, a million. A million rand in 100 rand bills could fit in a plastic bag, shopping bag. Now, here is 100 million. Fits on a pallet, sort of thing that Ray handles every day. That's a pallet. standard pellet. Our pellets are a bit bigger than that, maybe. Okay, here's $1 billion, 10 pellets. Of, and here, a billion, you see again, there's the 10,000, there's the million, there's the billion. This is what a trillion looks like. Remember, there's the person. There's the pentatlicon, there's the pellet, there's the person. Notice these are double stacked pellets. That means we're talking about 2 football fields worth. The size, width, and so on of a 747 jumbo jet. That's what the government steals every year, more than that. And they try to distract you. Corruption is killing us. Governments create wealth the same way ticks create blood. It's your blood. They suck the blood out of you. Shall I count pure those with wicked scales and with a bag full of deceitful weights? For her rich men are full of violence, her inhabitants have spoken lies, their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Skimping the measure, boosting the price, cheating with dishonest gain, I will never forgive, says the Lord. And we've got a government that's stealing from everyone blind. But to distract them, they're blaming the farmers and the whites and the Boers and the colonials and Jan van Riebeck. How long are we going to accept the smokescreen, the scapegoats, the distractions, the disinformation of these criminals who ruin this country? The middle letters of Kansas, ANC. I write small c, capital ANC, and small ER to make the point. We have a cancer government. The power cuts by Eskom cost our country billions. Do you know, they have been using diesel to run generators, which is the most cost and effective way of doing things. We are at this moment at the 60th anniversary of Kariba Dam being made in Rhodesia, which produced a kilowatt of energy for 2 cents. The cheapest energy imaginable, hydroelectric, a clean, renewable, safe energy, and that made possible phenomenal economic growth in Central Africa, the Central African Federation of Rhodesia, Northern Rhodesia and Nyasaland. And yet they thought ahead, they invested, and that saved the country 1 million tons of coal a year. And you can imagine the cost and the amount of locomotives and the 5,000 railway carriages and 80 locomotives that would be needed to continuously deliver that 1 million tons of coal to provide the electricity that was being provided by hydroelectric power. And what do we have? They're using diesel because the coal's wet. Stage 3 load shedding was costing our economy $80 billion per month. Do you know what lockdown cost us? 140 billion rand every week of lockdown level 5. 140 billion a week. That was the cost of the whole country of lost production. So, and yet, their solution? Expropriation without compensation. Second phase of the revolution. Taking from whites is not a crime, but they're stealing from everybody. They're distracting. But when Ramaphosa promoted, and by the way, you can see what enemies these guys are. Body language really tells you more. They're meant to be opponents, but here Cyril Ramaphosa accepted Julius Malema's, who's meant to be a deserter and a traitor who left the ANC, who used to be the ANC Youth League leader. No, he wasn't. He's as much part of the ANC as everyone else. The EFF's a deception operation, the ANC. It's proven. When the EFF put forward the expropriation without compensation bill, every one of the ANC members of Parliament voted for it. Now, if he was a traitor, deserter, opponent, enemy, they wouldn't have voted for his bill. Even if they liked the bill, they would have reintroduced one under their name. On principle, they would have voted against it. But they all voted for it. And it's cheaper politics to win votes. Misleading people just to win votes. Do you know the Southern government sitting on 4,323 farms that were handed over by the previous white owners but never transferred to black owners? Why didn't they start with those? Fact of white ownership of land. The total amount of land in South Africa, 26 million hectares. But, in fact, while South Africa's got 122 million hectares in total area, whites own just 26 million, most of which is in the Karoo, which is very, very sparsely cared for. So most of, you can see, the vast majority of the land owned by whites is in Northern Cape, which is extremely arid. So this business that all the land and most of the land and 70% of the land and 80% of the land, complete hogwash. Whites own 22% of the land in South Africa, and most of that is desert. Considering the catastrophic consequences of the economic suicide of the Zimbabwe model, completely in violation of international law, that they are talking about expropriation of compensation, taking away farms, lands, to the law and to the testimony. If they do not speak according to this word, it's because there's no light in them. Zimbabwe was warned by Mugabe's allies, Samora Machel, Mozambique, Tanzania's Julius Nyerere, warned Mugabe, don't expropriate land. Don't make the mistakes we did. Let the whites continue to contribute to the economy. But Mugabe threatened, and everyone said this won't happen because Mugabe knows, and Mugabe is an intelligent man, he wouldn't do this. And yet, this is what happened in Zimbabwe. Their farms, ruins, 5,600 commercial farmers evicted from their farms. People who had built these farms out of the wilderness. The economy collapsed, more than half the total population fled the country, voting with their feet, a vote of no confidence in Mugabe. It's a total deception. And yet, Thabo Mbeki backed Mugabe, gave him everything he needed, even electricity from Eskom to electrocute his people in Chikurubi prison. Complete political opportunism, even though it left the Zimbabweans destitute. This is at the end of land reform. This is where it goes. There is no dignity in starvation and dependent on foreign aid. And this is where it goes. But the World Food Program doesn't mind. That's what keeps them going. People who are starving. No farmer, no food, no future. Remember when Jacob Zuma was falling and Cyril Ramaphosa was rising? There was a wave of euphoria. And Christians who should know better, like people in ACDP saying, we are saved, a new day is dawning, now we can begin to rebuild our country. Our prayers have been answered. And what did Cyril Ramaphosa say in his opening address? We will seize land without compensation. Greeted by the longest, most sustained applause of his address. And yet after that, there are people saying, oh, what a wonderful man. He saved the country. Best thing that's ever happened to South Africa. Considering that South Africa is providing sanctuary to more than 10 million refugees who fled endemic misrule to the north, imploding food security in South Africa will affect far more than our own population. But don't worry, the government knows what's best. They're on top of it. From 70,000 commercial farmers feeding 100 million people throughout South Africa, barely 28,000 farmers left, only feeding 40 million. But our population is now over 59 million, more like 60. With a population doubling, our food production is 40% less than it was in 1994. By the way, do you know Eskom is producing less electricity now than it was in 1994? And electricity is costing, I don't know how much more, but it's in quantum leaps. The food crisis is about to get much, much worse, and so is the refugee crisis. In 1994, the South African rand was equal to about 2 rand to the dollar. Today it's what, 15, 16, 17? Hard to keep track. 16.5. So I remember when I could go to the petrol station for 5 rand, that's what a 5 rand note looked like. Didn't have a coin, had a note. There was a time when that was your biggest note, by the way. And you could fill your tank. Today, 100 rand won't even move it out of the red. This is the theft. This is the reality. And by the way, scenes from your next attraction? I have got a copy. For anyone who has not looked at these things, if you haven't handled a $100 trillion note, there we go. There's a $100 trillion note, and here is a $50 trillion note, if it's possible. Yeah. And it's worth nothing. It couldn't even buy a quarter of a loaf of bread.
This reminds me of where the master with that one.
Yeah. So, I hope you guys have got wheelbarrows. And the victim card's been overplayed. Vilifying the victims and villains playing the victim card may work for a time, but ultimately it's going to come back to destroy the one playing this dangerous game. You can't cry wolf over and over. The malicious destruction of so many historic places, monuments, graves, churches, homes, even entire forests, is a path of national suicide. Destruction for the sake of it, envy, greed, hatred, jealousy, like burning farms, burning forests. That doesn't build the kind of society any of us want to live in. Hate evil, love good, establish justice in the gates. Let justice roll down like a river and righteousness like a mighty stream. So what can we do? Most important, we all must do something. This is first and foremost an information war. We need to be informed. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. There are people making a stand, protesting, marching, banners, posters, t-shirts. There's resources to set the record straight. First of all, we've got to know our history, like sketches from South African history. Agenda 2, excellent to understand the commentary and a bitter harvest. A drama showing what happened in the decolonization policy in Russia and Ukraine. Philip Du Toit's Great South African Land Scandal, Land of Sorrow, hard reading but documentation. Farm murders, stories of some of the victims. The film you can get on Google, or you'll struggle to find it. I struggle to find it. Katie Hopkins, she's the most controversial journalist in Britain. Katie Hopkins produced Plasmorder, The Killing Fields. You'd probably have to go for Katie Hopkins first to find it. I struggled. I don't know if our guys can perhaps find it and get it on where it can be accessed, but she must get deplatformed every week or something. The other one is Farmlands, done by Lauren Southern. She's a Canadian. And these are the two best films I've seen, the only documentaries I've seen that give the whole case of the farm attacks. Of course, Ernst Root's book, Kill the Boer, is the best book that's been produced to this day. Our Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website and Facebook page, Africa Christian Action website, Young Reformers Out to Change the World Facebook pages. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of trouble from the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. I have lived through 8 wars, 3 revolutions, several aerial bombardments, artillery bombardments, rocket fire, ambushes, been imprisoned 3 times, I've been put against a wall more than once for firing squad, and I'm still here. Interestingly, back when I was going into the army in 1979, there was another young man whose parents decided to move to America, the Carolinas, to get away from national service, call-up. As I was being called up, and he would have been called up, he'd be the same age as me if he's still alive. I went into the army, and I went into a lot of wars since then. I'm 60. That poor man died before he reached 18. He killed himself driving drunk on a Friday night, wrapped himself, you can drive at age 16 in America, wrapped himself around a lamppost or something, on a Friday night coming back from a party. So his parents did the safe thing to keep him out of national service and military service. He didn't make his 18th birthday. Some people play it safe and trip down the stairs and break their neck. The other people go through war zones and get rocketed and bombarded and come out alive. You are safer in the middle of the center of God's will in a battle than you are outside of God's will in bed at home. It's not about the situation. It's about our situation with the Lord. And we've got to have that consciousness that whatever God's will is for us, I trust it. I don't have to understand it. But we do not need to fear man if we fear God. We need to be interceding. We need to be involved in practical action. We need to invest in workable solutions. And we need to implement workable strategies for security and survival. A prudent man foresees evil. Pray. Publish, prepare, protest. We need to stand up. We need to speak out. We need to step up. We need to be armed. We need to be alert. We need to stock up on supplies. You've all just discovered how quickly they can suddenly stop going to shops or keep you locked in at home and things like this. Do you have backup plans? Secure your home. Secure your farm, your church, and your mission. Prepare for lawlessness, power failures, water mains being cut. Know your neighbors and help one another. This strength and unity. Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. Now, we got our generators back in 1994. I expected power failures long before they came. Our first power failures came in 2005. We had our generators from 94. Why? I've traveled all over Africa. Bring your own infrastructure, is what they say. We had 5,000 litre water containers to harvest water off our roofs from rainwater at the mission and at our home. Way before 2000, and long before the droughts and the Cruella de Vil enforced drought, and all of that sort of thing. You've just got to be prepared. You've got to know these things are going to happen. And, of course, traveling in 42 countries has helped prepare me. We need to speak up on community radio phone and programs. Write letters and articles for your local newspapers and community newspapers. Contribute to a set of websites and blogs. And be involved in social media dealing with these issues. Organize public meetings, film screenings in your home maybe, showing films like Agenda 2, Bitter Harvest, Farmlands, Katie Hopkins' film, The Killing Fields. March. We've marched upon. This is back in the year 2000 when Thabo Mbeki tried to bring through Firearm Control Act 2000 to disarm all South Africans. These are marches taking place in England. This looks like it's Pretoria. This is also Pretoria. And people making a stand all over the world. This is, I think, in Britain. This is definitely in Britain. Notice the Nelson Mandela monument there. We want justice. And I believe this is up the South Africa House in London, Trafalgar Square. I've been there many a time. I believe this is in the Netherlands, marching Stop the Boer Genocide and Stop White Genocide in South Africa. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. Very important principles to remind people of. So there are different ways that people are standing up and speaking out and protesting, praying, mobilizing. Black Monday, White Cross protests. they made a point. Don't milk our future dry. No farmers, no future. And there are no boer, no pup. That makes a point. There are people standing together for peace in our land. Tractor protests. You can't exactly get past those. And these are just some of the practical things we can do. I wrote Security and Survival Handbook based on my decades of experience with the persecuted church on how we can secure our homes, ourselves, when we travel, our farms and our missions, and our churches. We have case studies of countries like Switzerland, church case studies like St. James Attack, case studies like home invasions, and what we can practically do to harden our targets. There are some excellent training programs that one can take. You should be armed, you should know how to use your weapons, and you should practice not just in a normal shooting range. It's a proven fact that criminals commit less crime after they've been shot. Recidivism is a lot less. And just a friendly reminder, we have our own war veterans, 600,000 of them, and ours actually fought a war. Real war. And some of us might be a lot older, but we can still sort them out. We know a lot of tactics. And there were the commandos. And by the way, the commanders for 300 years kept the farm safe. Voluntary units, but these were dismantled under Thabo Mbeki in 2003 with the promise that they would be replaced with other rural security structures, which has never happened. And so basically people are on their own. But with good neighborliness and good networks, and our networks, we can stand together. I know one case in Natal where a farmer was attacked and he managed to fight off his attackers. And although his cell phone was blocked, he had shortwave radio and called, and the other neighbors came. There's only one road in and out. And they blocked, and when the criminals coming, fleeing in their car, saw these buckies blocking away with these bullets with their rifles and shotguns, they stopped the car and fled into the sugar fields. The farmer who owned that particular sugar field was there. He said, burn them out. They set fire to sugar cane. If you've ever seen sugar cane on fire, it explodes like napalm. I mean, they found the bones later. Those chaps were incinerated. So that farmer was willing to sacrifice the whole field of sugar cane to stop these murders. Because if they attack one place, you're going to be sure it's not the first and it's not going to be the last time. And so there is a seriousness amongst many of our farmers. Many of our farmers are very well trained. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. Nehemiah 4:14. We need to rescue, redeem, restore, reform, and revive. Help build community structures. Support civic defense. Neighborhood watch organizations. Get networked. And work for decentralization. You'll see I put on a table forms that you can fill in for the Cape Independence Movement, Cape Exit. find groups in the area that you can network with, both for information and for support. This particular Sunday, there is a protest starting at Parliament. There's a walk to Parliament. I think it's starting at 9:45 to march from the Cape Tech to Parliament. And then from Parliament, there's going to be a process off to Paarl, a driving off to Paarl with a plan to plant crosses and have a protest at Paarl that would be on the N1, visible just like the cross copy Plas Mortar memorial demonstration off into north of Pretoria. So, any questions? Any comments?
Are there any more details about that? Because
yes.
Do we have any solution to thousands of cars in front of Parliament?
Yes. So now, what I heard today is the plan now, they had to do, that was the original plan, discussion with the Cape Town City of Cape Town, COCT as they call it. They must park at the place where we normally start by Cape Tech, but there's a big parking area opposite Cape Tech 2, and then walk to Parliament, not allowed to be more than 500 people, says the City Council, which... but still, there'll be some meeting outside Parliament, then we'll disperse, and many will get into vehicles at back of where we started and drive through to Parliament, where there will be more activities on, I think, a farm where they plan to plant crosses.
Any information on where that farm is and where one could actually just meet there?
I'm going to have to get those details. So they're encouraging us to bring... You can bring flags, you can bring wear T-shirts of, for example, the Cape Exit people are one of the sponsors and supporters, encouraging one to come with Cape Exit banners and T-shirts and so on. But there'll be every different group as welcome making the stand. So that's what is... They said they'll start gathering from 9, start the march at 9:45 to Parliament, Sunday the 25th, and then after meeting there, walk. I'm not sure why they chose a Sunday. I wouldn't have chosen that. I don't like the idea Parliament's closed, but that's what has been chosen as the Cape Town protest. Yes?
Just wanted to mention that these days, right, that farmers are liking protests and stuff. There was this guy who used to deliver food at the young. He was basically collecting from farmers directly to the public, and he was not allowed to get food because they protest his time, and they're not giving food to everyone to make a point.
Well, what I thought I heard is that they're not going to be providing farms, providing food to many of these stores, but they're going to sell directly to the public.
Well, that's
just my understanding.
That guy was basically collecting from farms to the public. He was like, he had this business where he would buy from farms and
yes.
sell it to the public. But he was not allowed. I said a few people also are getting stressed.
Well, I would understand that if you've got a company that is being racist in their operation. So they do BBBEE and so on. You say, well, okay, well, we won't supply to you, but we're going to supply directly to the public. But I don't know why they would cut out a middleman who doesn't want to do distribution.
But he said that he
farmers need customers too.
For a while, he said that he supports them.
So they're trying to make some stand.
Yeah.
We've got to be wise in our tactics. To me, I was very concerned that people calling for this gathering in Senegal that... If one isn't careful, you don't want to fall into EFF tactics. We must never accept the enemy's invitation to come and play on their prepared minefield with booby traps and so on. Or in a situation where they want to provoke you to where you react, and just like the fact that it didn't matter what the farmers did, they had a picture of a burning police vehicle on the side, and that's how they characterized the whole thing, which is so unfair and so untrue, and the eyewitnesses said nothing of the sort. There was no violence from the farmer's side, but this is the way they've been portrayed, and we must be so careful that we never act. Just because thugs like Antifa and EFF and BLM can behave in this way, we mustn't ever go anywhere near that. That's not our way. As Christians, we've got to have a higher standard.
No, but it's typical of the way the media does it. I'm personally aware of a spokesperson at Senegal talking and telling the people that, you know, we better behave and what, and he was calling the rules, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to march down there. And He said, and don't worry, if one single policeman shoots an innocent farmer, I will lead a war. And that's the words they printed. I will lead a war.
Mm.
You know, that's it. Not what he said before the time. You know?
That's the only clip I saw.
Yeah.
So the context is lost. You've got to be so careful in your words because, yeah.
Someone who really reports well on events is Willem Petzer.
Willem Petzer, he's somebody who you can see puts up quite a lot of YouTube clips to get another side. I was also hearing from Skulk van der Merwe, who ran the Free South Africa, or is it Radio Free South Africa, from the Free State. And he's one that you could see in that picture where he's like this in front of the EFF and they're putting on the brakes. And I know that there were some very good people there at Senegal. The trouble is you've got to be careful. There can always be an agent provocateur amongst who just wants to incite problems and give a bad reputation to the whole group. You've got to be careful who you march with and then make sure that other people are behaving themselves too.
You know, just a quick question about the stats.
Yes.
It would be interesting to know how many of the farm attacks and farm murders are related to large farms as opposed to some of the small farms.
I've never seen a report on that. Has anyone else noticed? I don't know if the size of the farm makes much of a difference.
Well, in terms of the preparedness, because obviously the bigger the farm, the more wealthy they are, the more prepared they can be. Yeah. Where the smaller farmers would not have the
that might make sense, but it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, okay.
You just take, for example, you go on speaking tours and you think the big church is where you're going to get most of the support. In fact, the big church is where you can carry the same amount of books back in that you took. They don't even take any literature. And then you go to a little church and they buy everything out and they keep it in. There's lots of questions and the people keep you there for hours. So, in fact, the size often is almost directly inverse that where you think the bigger farms would be better prepared, often that's not so. Sometimes the little farms, I saw that in Rhodesia, some of the little farms were the ones that were really well prepared. I was in farms in Rhodesia where you had this old Umi and old Tani, and they and their dogs fought off this massive terrorist attack with mortars and machine guns and so on, and they totally beat them off. And then you get this other farm with a lot of young people and they just weren't ready. And so, no, it's hard to stereotype.
So considering that this worldwide genocide against whites, how connected then is this genocide against the white farmers here to that movement? Would you say they're connected, something totally separate, side-by-side movement, parallel?
I'd say it is networked ideologically at the very least because it's communism. The Marxists, obviously the Marxists hate everybody, but you target people most vulnerable. Like, the fact that they're targeting white farmers doesn't mean that whiteys in the city aren't targets as well. They're just starting with the people more vulnerable. They have every intent. And then the other people can't say, I'm not white, it's not going to affect me. In fact, they tend to suffer the most. As you can see, once they got rid of the white farmers out of Rhodesia, who suffered the most? The Matabele. Matabele were slaughtered and thrown down the mine shafts by the thousands in Zimbabwe. So make no mistake, it's not really a race thing, but they like to, I suppose it's a matter of confuse, divide and conquer. And select, so and once they divide and rule, you first deal with this, then you can deal with that. So strategically, they've seen whites are a problem. They've produced people like Martin Luther, my conscience captive word of God, or give me liberty or give me death, that sort of pain in the neck. So obviously statists want to get rid of these Protestant wasps, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, the bane of any totalitarian dictator's life. But this white genocide is particularly drawn, I think, to get rid of the fact that, bear in mind, in 1910, Europeans were the primary vast majority of Christians. In fact, two-thirds of all the Christians in the world were white Europeans back in 1910, First World Missions Conference. Today, it's a minuscule amount of world's Christians would be. And while Europeans were 32% of the world's population in 1910. Today, Europeans are only 9% of the world's population. Actually, I think it's more like 8% right now. It's going down. And they've done this many ways, not just the world wars, but massive propaganda of overpopulation. Of course, feminism. did a lot to stop people getting married, just for starters. And then birth control and abortion, and then the LGBTQ and the gay, and it bombarded massive, massive attacks in Europe. And then guilt, the idea that it's evil to want to reproduce your own kind, and even though God commands us to in the creation mandate. And so that there's a lot of people in Europe who have decided they don't want to marry, they don't want to have children, or they abort, they sterilize, whatever. And so Europe has gone from being phenomenally dominating to where they're a dying continent. And now that, even South Africa, you take, you know, I was born in Cape Town in 1960. There were 220,000 people in the whole of Cape Town back in 1960. And now Cape Townians are a minority in their own city. White South Africans are a minority in their own country. The Cape people are almost a minority in the Cape because of massive demographic engineering. And there's a goal behind it. And yes, I think it's the same, while it might not always be organizationally linked, they're ideologically linked not only through Marxism, but by this critical race theory of the Frankfurt School. This is the whole Gramsci strategy. So, yes, white genocide, which is articulated particularly by Jewish professors in universities, that the white people are a cancer to the world and we've got to get rid of them. And, you know, world wars are a bit slow. You know, killing millions of people isn't fast enough. They've killed far more through abortion, through sterilization and feminism, and overtaxation to force the wife out of the home into the workplace to pay the taxes. That's been the most effective way of bringing down the birth rates of Europeans, because once they got the wife out of the home, the average woman went from having 8 children on average to having 1 or 2. I think in Europe it's something like 1.2. In America it's something like 2.4 children per woman in America. That's the average right now. Whereas, of course, the Muslims, that's 8.4 is more like it, and so on. So you can see that the demographics, they are winning the war demographically, because most white people are either not getting married. In fact, how did Katie Hopkins put it? Katie Hopkins said that they're managing to get white women to be feminists and dry up their ovaries while they sip wine and adopt a dog, and things like this. And it's interesting analysis, but basically what's happened in Europe. And so, yes, the goal of white genocide, and then the next step is replacement. You know, bring in the Muslims and the Turks and so on to go and take over countries that used to be Germany and Netherlands and so on, but will not be if present trends continue and if they don't reverse this. And, of course, there's resistance, but some of them have left it a bit late. Yes?
I would like again to ask about farms that supply food for big companies like Checkers and Pick and Pay. Are they ever in danger as like farms that supply for small businesses? Because with this whole corona thing, those big businesses are not suffering.
Well, I can guarantee you that these big businesses like Pick and Pay and so on are not getting... They're not getting their supplies from the average white farmer. They'll be getting them from a BBB, EE, government corporation that bought up and so on. They will not be, by law, if they're BBB, EE companies, they aren't allowed to buy from a white farmer. Unless it's one of these farms that's owned by some cabinet minister's cousin who might have a white foreman running it, maybe, but... It's got to be a BBBEE company before they'll buy from it. Rainbow Chickens on. Does anyone know anything different?
Yeah, and a lot of imports.
Yes.
Just a comment on the people doing the farm workers. I think it's a time in South Africa history that we need to realize it's not ordinary people. It's people that are demon-possessed doing farm murders. And that farmers really need to turn back to the Word of God. I don't know, it's like 8 of 10 farm attacks, there is people from the farm involved into the attack, and the farmers really make the primary